Are y'all ready, kids?
Aye, aye, Captain!
The story is everything.
I'm gonna proclaim this to be Walter Beasley Week.
Once the music bug bit me, I was like, oh, I'm pretty good at this, and let me practice some more. If you really want something and you really believe in yourself, then you can't think about it twice. You have to make that move. If you don't see it, you can't become it.
Your show about culture, arts, and happenings in the Imperial Valley from a youth perspective. I'm Dr. Tom Tackey, the creator and executive producer of Valley Vibes. Today, we are joined by El Centro's own Walter Beasley. With 30 albums to his name since 1998, Walter has consistently been on one of the top 10 best-selling saxophonists in the world. Walter's career also includes a long tenure at the Berklee College of Music in Boston. Hey, welcome, Walter.
How you doing? Nice to see you.
And we're doing great here. You know, I'm going to proclaim this to be Walter Beasley Week because tomorrow, September 21st, your episode of our KPBS podcast series, Voices del Valle, is going to be released. And then Saturday, September 27th, you have a concert in Fontana.
Yeah.
But, you know, enough of me talking. I'm going to turn this over to our Valley Vibes hosts, Athena, Edison, and Axel.
Athena, Axel, and Axel.
All right, so my name is Athena. I'm a junior.
Okay.
My name is Edison. I'm a senior.
Okay. My name is Axel, and I'm a junior too.
Okay. Nice to meet you all.
Yeah, nice to meet you too. So welcome. You have a concert coming up on September 27th in Fontana. We'll talk about that in a bit. And also, you're the feature of an episode of our Voices of IA podcast series we have with KPBS. And that'll be released tomorrow, September 21st.
Beautiful, beautiful. I'm grateful to do it.
Nice. So in the KPBS episode, you talk about growing up in El Centro and those coming of age years. But today, let's just briefly start with your El Centro roots and then get into your professional career.
Okay, so what was it like leaving the Valley? Like, how was that for you?
Scary as hell. I had never lived outside Imperial Valley. My parents had taken me to Christiansburg, Virginia. We would go every year to see my grandparents, right? Or every 2 years. But I had never lived outside of El Centro. But I was so hungry to go where the action was, and I felt that I was one of the best in the country. And that meant that I had to go to the East Coast to find out really if I had things going on. And but that was probably the scariest part of my life. I won't say that because I was so committed and so driven that when I got on that plane, I was like, well, here we go. When I got to Boston and I saw they live differently in Boston. They live on top of each other, like in big buildings and all that kind of stuff. So when we flew in, I'm looking at these big brick buildings and I'm like, people live on top of each other over here? I was like, I don't know about that. And that's when I started, that's when it hit me like, oh man, El Centro is a long way away. But then when I got to into the school, I just dove into the music. And there were times when I was very, very lonely, you know. And I had a couple of, I had a friend or two that I was pretty close to in the Valley, you know. And I missed them, you know, a lot. I missed my family a lot. But I kept in contact with everybody as much as I could. But that part of my life, looking back, that's an excellent question, too. It taught me that if you really want something and you really believe in yourself, then you can't think about it twice. You have to make that move. And I was grateful that I had the support of many people in the Imperial Valley, My parents, my family, extended family, people from the black and brown community who supported me, you know, and others, you know, on a couple of families on the west side. And they just really felt that I was the one to get out and do something. And I'm very grateful for that. And in my heart, I always carry that around with me, you know. So that's exactly how I felt at that time. It was a lot of pressure, but I knew that I was one of the best in California. I needed to know if I was one of the best in the world.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely a huge change. So.
Mm-hmm. What artists do you think have influenced you in your music?
They don't have to be major artists, right? Excuse me. I just got back down here now. The allergies are kicking up because of the dust and all that, man. I'm like, dang. The first artist like that I knew was Mr. Cannon. ¿Qué pasó, todavía? Was Mr. Cannon, my mentor, and you know, there's a room named after him at Southwest, and he was just very instrumental in me learning what I needed to learn to be successful. Derek, my older brother, I used to ride. We were just talking about that yesterday. I used to get on my bike when I was maybe 11, 12, 13, something like that, and ride from the north side all the way to the west side to practice, you know, Tower Power horns, Chicago horns, and you know, just practice improvisation with him. Stuff that his father was teaching us, and he lived with his father. So it was funny because his father would be in the room down the hall, and he would never say nothing to us if we were messing up or anything like that. He just let us do what we were supposed to do. But the ride across... you know, to the west side was interesting because Mr. Cannon's family was the first family to integrate the west side over there on Cottonwood. So there were people who weren't too happy, you know, with me riding my bike over there with the saxophone. But I did it anyway because, like I said before, I was very, very driven. So to your question now, that those were the first, you know, memories of people who inspired me to do the best that I could on the horn. Also, I played with a group called Los Elegantes and then later called Sabor. And we played all different types of music, but we played like adults. We didn't play the music, you know, like kids. They started playing in clubs. It's probably illegal. They were probably playing 10, 11 years old. I came along at 14. And, you know, we, in fact, we're getting ready to do some music in the next couple of weeks, actually, just for old time's sake. But that was the genesis. That was the foundation. Those were the first, I would say, heroes that really... Junior, Mario, and the core of the group, you know, we all played together. We kind of, you know, we went through puberty together. We went through all that kind of stuff. And that was the foundation of my musicianship and a couple others. But those were the musicians who really I looked to as saying, you know what? I learned everything there before I went to Boston.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Okay, so you've obviously had a successful career, but do you think you can take us back when you said, okay, music is my thing. Like, I want to do this.
Well, you know, at Central, there were some fine women there, man. I'm not going to lie. And they were either in the band, then they were in the athletes camp or the band camp. You know, I mean, that was just, and I wasn't a good athlete. So I said, you know what? I better do this music thing because I'm not getting noticed at all. So that's what I did. It was for the love of the girls, you know. And then once the music bug bit me, I was like, oh, I'm pretty good at this. And let me practice some more. I'm like, oh, I kind of love this. Let me practice some more. And then music became a love and became an obsession. It became the woman that I really wanted. And that's how I decided, you know, let me cut out some of this stuff and just stop chasing and even stop chasing music. But let me start defining myself or not defining myself, but let the music have its way with me and let's see where this ends up. And I was probably about 14 or 15. There was a high school my father taught as well. He told me a story about a man named Ricky Williams. Ricky Williams was an average athlete, you know, and he disappeared from the Valley and went somewhere and practiced his behind off. And just when he came back, he became a stellar athlete. And people he's one of the best athletes in the history of the Valley. And I remember, and he pitched watermelons with my father, and we worked in the fields too. So, you know, when my father told me these stories, I was like, wow, you know, if Ricky can do it, then I can do it, you know. And so you develop heroes like that, you know, who are maybe 2 or 3, 4 years older than you. That's how it was. I just talked to somebody the other day. My father said, my father taught me, he said, look, I'm going to take you out. This is interesting. So, well, to me anyway, I would play with Los Elegantes at night. until about 2 o'clock in the morning. And my father would wake me up at 4 a.m. to go to the fields to pick watermelons. I was like, man, this is child abuse. Yeah. But what he taught me was that there's nothing that I can do now or that hits me now that won't allow me to be the best that I can be and take care of myself or my family. And that's my foundation.
What genre do you think you consider yourself?
Ooh. It depends, because this last record was definitely a Latin jazz, and I did some bachata on there, and I did some, it wasn't a cumbia, it was kind of bolero. So the last album, I just went far to the left of things that I've been doing all my life, like the black music and contemporary jazz and stuff like the R&B. And I wanted to do something that was in Spanish because, you know, like I said, half of my childhood was spent on the north side. So, and people from that community really helped me become the musician that I am. So I wanted to kind of pay tribute to them and that. So the smooth, that's definitely not smooth jazz. But what I try to do is not limit myself. Now I'm into this thing called ambient music, and I have an ambient channel called the Blue Zone Ambient, and it's spelled B-L-E-U. And I just do nothing but write, you know, ambient tracks for that just so I could chill out. And I want other people to chill out because we're living in a very crazy-ass world, you know, so... that which I can do to help ease my pain and help ease my mind, I want to share with other people, you know? So that's my main focus. So the categories and all that kind of stuff, you know, that's pretty much gone anyway. You know, the music industry is just crap at this point as it relates to that. And with social media and everything else, you can do exactly what you want and move the people that you really target if you've got the goods. And so that's what I'm concerned about.
So I really like how you're able to, like, blend both of the cultures. But how do you balance, like, honoring traditional genres while also creating something fresh and innovative?
You're not 16. For me, all the experiences... I do not judge any of my experiences, right? So... the relationships that I had and the music that I played con los elegantes, that's dear to my heart. The music that I played, you know, when I play it now with the band that I have now, we play all different kind of music, whether it's 300 people, 3,000, that's dear to me as well. So I don't make any decisions as to what type of music or what people are more important than the others. That's kind of the stuff that's going on now pisses me off because, you know, it's just... it's hateful. But anyway, to your point, if I don't judge which experience is better and which experience is not, then I let them, you know, I just let them organically come into my heart. And my expression is basically not perfect, but it's sincere. So that allows me to do what I need to do. So if I'm, let's just say I'm doing an R&B tune, which I do, actually I do more of it now, but when I do an R&B tune, at the end of the show, I do a cadenza on an R&B song, and then I go right into Rosa Maria se fue a la playa, and people just get like, what the hell is this? And then we'll do it, and we'll do the salsa thing, and I play on it and just play, and sing, and people are like, oh my goodness, this is some crazy stuff. And then I bring it back to jazz music, and I'll go back and forth. And to my knowledge, at least in my genre, and smooth jazz, I'm the only one who's doing it. And that feels good to me because, like I said, I want to pay respect to the communities and the people, not only black but brown, who were responsible for my success.
Yeah, that's really great to always, like, pay homage to, like, where you come from.
Exactly. I live here now. I can move back. Well, not to the Central, but I moved back to Yuma to take care of my parents. So it's, you know, I spent 6 months away and 6 months here. So I'm very grateful for my foundation. And I hope to, you know, to stay, to have... a tie here for the rest of my life, because people like you need to see that people like me, you know, made it out. You know, if you don't see it, you can't become it. So that's important to me. And especially with what's going on now, it's fact that, you know, people of color are being really crushed, you know, and with this, what's going on now, you know, people who have interesting opinions of others who don't look like them. It's not about whether you were born here, whether you're not. Those feelings you have deep inside your heart and you're using that as an excuse. And it's always been the case. And, you know, you're a little bit young now, but things really haven't changed all that much. People will judge you by the way you look and the way you speak, but it is still your responsibility to find a way to break down that barrier to be successful. That's my philosophy.
Yeah, that's a really important thing to have in your music and just to like live out. Yeah, but
yeah, and you got and the way I mean, you didn't ask the question, but the way I was taught was that, you know, because of the way I looked, I had to be twice as good than my neighbor who didn't look like me. So, you know, if it's just evident that I am the cat or you are the cat, then, you know, no matter what you look like, people are going to have to take, you know, going to have to really look at you for who you are and what you represent. And then that's when you use the social media thing to take off. It's all.
Yeah. So when you're recording an album or working on a new track, how much do you focus on the message or story behind the music versus like the technical aspects of the sound?
It's all. The story is everything. I used to be, man, that's a little flat. Oh, that's a little sharp. Man, well, you guys will find out soon enough. But when your woman leaves you, you're not perfectly in tune. You are flat. So if I get, you know, if I went through that situation and I'm sitting there like, wow, this is the way I feel. And I'm singing or I'm playing. And that line just really reflects exactly the way I'm feeling, whether it's flat or sharp. But if it moved me, I know Mr. Cannon used to teach us, if it moves you, it'll move somebody else. And that's what I focus on. I mean, it's not really. I mean, if it sucks, it sucks. You know what I mean? But if it's a little bit flat and it's there, and or a little bit sharp and it's there, and I'm feeling it, I know somebody else will feel it as well. The problem is with technology is that people want everything so pristine and so precise and so perfect that we all sound the same. You know, that we all sing the same, that we all play the same. And we lose the ability to move somebody with our experiences when we all sound the same. That's why the music all sounds the same. You know, you can listen to one reggaeton piece and it sounds like all the rest of them. You can listen to one jazz piece, it sounds like all the rest of them. So that's you know, that's one of my pet peeves is that, you know, when you're playing, when you're singing, if the message, like you just said, if the message is conveyed in a way that makes you feel like you've done your best to convey that message, then leave it alone. People will respond to it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all about being genuine and like...
Exacto.
Yeah.
Do you speak Spanish? I'm sitting here speaking Spanish, and I don't even know if you guys do.
Oh, we do,
speak Spanish, yeah.
Oh, okay, cool. Do. Cool, because some people... You know, I mean, it's kind of... I don't know, it's weird because... some people don't, and some people get offended when I start speaking, right? Because they don't think, oh, well, just because I'm, it doesn't mean that I speak Spanish. And they got a point, you know? They have a point, so I just want to be respectful about it. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, don't worry.
All right. He said, don't worry, dude.
Yeah, so what was one of your first, like, oh, wow, I made it moments?
Is this G-rated? This is the part where it gets interesting, Tim.
Speak freely, it's okay. Yeah.
Well, how do I put this on? When I was treated to a very beautiful, intimate experience after a concert, and I said, you know, I can get used to this. And that was it. I was like, oh, okay. I think I know, you know, that I think I'm all right now. And
you're like, yeah, this is the life.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
That's exactly, you asked it, that's the answer to it.
That was your realization.
Yeah. Yeah, I was like, oof. I was like, all right, football players. I got something too. So yeah, and I mean, to be frank about it, you know, when you know that you can move a woman that you're interested in, you know, to have her look at you maybe twice or consider you twice. So the second time you have to really, you know, you gotta do what you gotta do. But that second look or that second conversation is where you know that you've moved them by doing something creatively that, you know, excites them enough to have a conversation with you about maybe, you know, having a relationship. That's a better response, I guess. But the first one was accurate.
That's pretty funny. All right, so tell us about the upcoming concert in Fontana, a tribute to fathers.
Fontana's about 3 hours away. Well, from you, it's about 4 hours away from me. No, it's about 3 hours away from me, I think. But it's a tribute to fatherhood. And it's a tribute to fathers and father figures put on by Ronnie Behrman. He once said we agreed that, you know, Mother's Day, boy, you know, the heavens open up and the roses and the flowers and all that. And he said on Father's Day we get a tie. You know, so, and he wants to really draw attention to the fact that, you know, fathers and father figures and people who are older who give back to their families and communities need to be honored. And that's what this is about. And it's a concert that features me. It also, I was able to ask Derek Cannon to come up, Mr. Cannon's son. We grew up together playing music, so he'll be there. Tom Brown, you don't know these names because you weren't even being thought of when these names pop up. But Tom Brown, Jamaica Funk, and Thighs High, and Ronnie Laws will be. It'll be a tribute to Ronnie Laws, who did a couple of songs that were very. He was very important to me. And Philip Doc Martin, he's on the East Coast. I want to feature him because he's the next wave of talent coming up. So that's important to me, too. So I think tickets are almost gone, from what I understand. So and people from El Centro are coming up, and people, you know, who I grew up with are actually coming to the concert, who live, like, close by. Not, you know, that's important to me as well. So they can see that, you know, the boy who left did pretty good. You know, I know you're not yawning at my response, bro. I see you over there. You're in a yawn, the one in the middle. What's his name?
Edison.
He fighting that yawn. I hear you.
Oh no, I wasn't. I just felt something in my throat. So, I wasn't yawning.
Yeah, that's all right, bro. You got it. Go ahead. What's up?
Is there times you have like an art block?
And what I do to get over it?
Yes.
Mr. Cannon taught that, you know, there'll be peaks and valleys, you know, to expression and practicing and all that kind of stuff. So when I hit a peak, when I hit a valley, I kind of just stop and just kind of assess, you know, what am I doing to be in this valley, you know, or not doing. So I'm a little different. Sometimes people will practice out of it or do more and more and more and just get up, but not me. I just kind of take a break. At 64, you just, you know, if it's not happening on that day, you say thank you for the opportunity and wait for another day, you know, wait for the next day. But I still write. So I like writing, so I write every day. And I practice every 2 or 3 days. I haven't practiced much this week, but I'm going to start on that because of the performance. But every, you know, I mean, my aunt died, my cousin died, my matriarch died last week, and we put her to rest yesterday. And I wanted to practice, I wanted to write, but it just wasn't in me. Earlier on in my career, I said, can you just do it anyway? Do it anyway. It's a discipline, blah, 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 blah. But I'm like, man, you know, when you put somebody in the ground, it's just, you have to really take a step back and let that experience itself do what it's supposed to do. And then, you know, tomorrow or today rather, when I practice, it becomes a part of me, it becomes a part of my expression, you know, and things are deeper. When Mr. Cannon passed, I just almost collapsed. I was in Boston and I had to just kind of reorient everything, because I would call him even in his 80s and ask him advice, you know, even when I was very, very famous, well, in my genre. So, you know, it's that, not even political. The political situation here makes it very difficult for me to say different things and to play certain things, because, you know, everybody is just different now. Everything, you know, people are targets and people are. It's a bad. I've never seen it this way. My parents probably have, but I've never seen the environment this toxic. And it's hard to create in a toxic environment. It really is. Unless you're calling out, you know, the toxic environment, right? But you really can't do it, because now with censorship and people getting fired for this and all that kind of stuff, for you to speak your truth could be dangerous. You know, you can lose everything.
Yeah.
Kedio?
Very, very true.
Oh, okay. I figured I could amen from you on that one. But and that's the challenge, because if you think back, well, you guys are too young. But there were artists like Marvin Gaye when I was growing up, artists like Bob Dylan, who spoke truth to power, who spoke about, you know, wars and sports and stuff. And you know, people listened, and culture was changed by them. But what I know, because it's like, you know, you can get arrested for or get thrown, or you can curriculum over for saying, look, you know, I said something the other day, well, no, months ago. I said that I believe that every child has the right to live life, and that people who hurt children, whether they're, you know, nations or whether they're individuals, deserve to be punished and punished harshly for hurting any child anywhere in this world. And when I said that afterwards, I noticed that my likes and I noticed that my sharing on that, because I have like 129,000 people on Facebook, I noticed that they weren't, it wasn't going out to as many people. And if I say something politically charged, like yesterday when we buried my aunt, there was a picture of Charlie, on the door. And I have all of us are black, right? There's some Hispanics there too, but most of us are black. And we're coming in to bury our aunt, who was Democrat, very Democrat. So I'm like, I didn't see it, but my cousin did, and we had them take it down. I'm like, is that really necessary to do something like that when you know people have different political beliefs, and this has nothing to do with politics? We're trying to do something like that, and that's happening a lot more now, where people are just taking advantage, not just on the right, but on the left as well. And I just think, we need to kind of pull it back a little bit. And when you express stuff like this, like, everybody is my brother. Every child deserves every child has the right to live, and to not, whether you're a country or whether you're an individual, to hurt children is just a bad thing. It's a horrible thing. I can't say that too many times online, because people will come back and attack me and say, no, you're not supporting this, you're not supporting that, so I'm not going to support you. Well, that's a price that I can live with. But at the same time, if you're younger, say you're in your 20s or whatever, and that's your position and you want to articulate that truth, it's dangerous, because you're trying to make a living for yourself. You're trying to come up, And now they've kind of blocked that, at least for now. I have hope that it'll change, but, you can't be socially active and not risk everything in this climate because of the current administration. So I'm done with that.
Okay. So I feel that a lot of people that live in the Valley here have the drive and they really want to leave, because we live in such a small town where it's everybody knows everyone and there's not much to do, So once you finally leave and you go and you see the outside world, you're like, whoa, You get overwhelmed, and it's just the most amazing thing ever. But you've already experienced that. So what's it like coming back, visiting?
Yeah, you've been here before. Whoever that's a good question. For me, the majority of the people that I knew or that were close to me, who are in my age group, they're married, have kids, grandkids. So they have different schedules. They have an Imperial Valley schedule. That's what I call it. It's very different, very simple, but at the same time, lots of responsibility, right? When I left, I never got married. Never had any children. So I'm coming back like, yo, what's popping? Let's do this. Let's do that. And everybody's growing up in their, in a Valley kind of way. And the Valley is still very, very conservative, for the most part. So when you come back, and to your point, once you've experienced so many things, I got into studying a lot about Black and Brown history when I was in Boston. So you want to come back, you want to share that with your homies. Yo, man, I learned this and I learned that, I learned this. Learning that, what was interesting? I learned that Mexico was the first country in the Americas to have a Black president. And nobody knows that yet. We're right next door to Mexico. And they killed him after about a year, but he was still the first Black president. And so, you think about it and you divert, you say, okay, well, why didn't Obama say thank you or anything like that? And you want to have conversations with that, about that to people here. And some of them, they're not even interested, because it's just like their world is so, not isolated, but they take care of my babies and I'm good. I don't really want to talk about that one, because it's, I can never change that. Until they, and you want to tell them, no, you can change that. You can change yourself. You can change that. But the mentality is hard to change, right? And sometimes you don't want to change it, because that's what makes us us. That's what makes the Valley the Valley. The purity of not really wanting to experience something different, just wanting to do what's that that I'm trying to say? It being, where you just look at one thing one way for your whole life. No, I'm Catholic. I don't want to accept the truth of Islam. No, because I'm Catholic and I know the rosary, that kind of thing. And that's sometimes a little bit difficult, because then I go back to Boston and I can, talk to people in different ways and like that. But at the same time, the simplicity, the honor, the respect, the support of the people in the Valley you know, is there for a reason. And the culture of the Valley is what made me who I am. So I don't disrespect that. I simply, you know, change and become the person that I was, or emphasize the things that I love about the Valley when I come back. In your situation, you're going to have to leave to be successful in certain things. You're going to have to leave. But you take them with you when you go. That's what you do.
That is just phenomenal. You know, that describes very much kind of how I grew up too.
I mean,
you know, it's not always easy to go back.
Yeah.
But
and I came back to take care of my parents.
It was weird.
I mean, okay, when I came back to take care of my parents, people in Boston were telling, you know, my half homies in Boston, because I was there for 35 years, they were like, Walter, you can't go back. You can't do this. You can't. I said, look, man, my parents need me. I have to go back. This, you know, and not only that, but you're asking me, or you're telling me that I can't go back and be comfortable in an environment that made me who I was or who I am. So, no, you can go back, but you have to have a reason to go back, and you have to really enjoy, you have to really focus on that reason. And, you know, change is, nobody expects change. Change always happens. The one thing you can depend on is change. So to be able to accept that, and I wrote two records while I was here, you know, and I built a studio, and we're in it now in my home. So I could just do, you know, create. It's not finished yet, but I still work here. And it's you know, you can record anywhere. You can play anywhere. But to be able to come back to the Valley and help those who helped me, especially later on in their lives, is a blessing beyond compare.
Very true. Walter, we really thank you for your time, and wish you the best with the Tribute to Fathers concert.
Thank you.
I think that's, you know, it looks like it's going to be an outstanding event. And
I really practice now because I'm kind of behind on that. And Derek Cannon, he's impeccable all the time. So I don't want him to come out and just crush me. when is it? That thing going to be aired tomorrow on PBS, or where can I find it?
This one, okay.
The other one.
Mm-hmm. So your episode of You're From Where? Our Voices Del Valle will be released on KPBS on Monday the 21st. You can find that anywhere you find your podcast. So.
PBS
website, on Spotify, any place you get your podcasts.
And I can put, it's okay to put this and the other on my Facebook page.
Of course.
Okay. All right. She said, yeah, do that.
Of course. Yeah. I'll stop the recording here.
Okay.
We good to do that?
Wow, that was a really interesting podcast. It was really amazing to have the opportunity to speak to Walter Beasley. And I think, in my opinion, one of my favorite parts was when he was talking about that you, in order to become successful, you do have to leave the Valley, but not to forget your roots and where you come from, and make sure you always showcase that and be grateful for what you have.
Yeah, because the thing about coming from here is that you need to just, like, shoot for the sky and, like, have really high aspirations. And to do that, you kind of just, sadly, you got to get out of here. Yeah,
you really need that drive and the ambition.
So it was really cool to get to talk to him and to just meet someone who made it out of here and, like, made something of themselves when really, like, they just came from
a small town like here. Yeah. So let's close the show and listen to a bit of If You Ever Loved Someone and Lost. It's a great early recording of Walter's.
Oh, the combination of loneliness and fright keeps me awake at night. I'm wondering if you're gonna be with your I
And let's close the show with another one of his songs, A Burr Paisano.
This program was produced and brought to you by Spartan Sound Productions. Special thanks to our guests, Walter Beasley, and Valley Vibes hosts, Athena, Edison, and Axel.
Thanks also to Dr. Thomas Tackey, creator and executive producer of Spartan Sound Productions, the administration of Central Union High School, Mr. Javier Fimbres, and Power 98 for hosting us, and to you, the listeners.